Welcome to episode 40 of the 11.7 podcast. It is a great Friday night. You guys stay with us because we have a great show. Let's get it, James. Hello, 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 college baseball fans. It is another great night to talk a little bit about college baseball. If you can hear it, I have a little bit of allergies going on. I got the sneezies. James is already making fun of me. I guess I'm allergic.
I wasn't going to, but you said you have the sneezies. So yeah.
I guess I'm allergic to LSU's bullpen because I watched a lot of that tonight.
And dude, I think Paul Maneri is allergic to LSU's bullpen. Oh. They've gotten their brains beat in twice in the last 48 hours.
I know. And it looks so good and so promising for LSU. Off to like a 3-0 lead early in the game. Arkansas's fans was completely out of it. And then it was just like, I forgot his name, Hester, some kind of weird last name. Starts with a K. There's a J right next to it. I can't pronounce it. I saw it on Twitter. But I was watching the game, and he hits a home run deep to right center. And before the ball landed,
Kerstad,
yeah. But there's a J in there, which throws me off.
He was also in that, dude. There are so many of these players in that like baseball simulation game. They all ended up being like 5-year all stars. I tell you, man, I had Kerstad on my team too. Paid him big bucks.
Are you talking about out of the park baseball?
Yes, you have. Yeah. You have to if you're listening and you like college baseball. For $10, you can have an awesome game with a ton of amateur stars in it at the major league level. It's fun. But yeah. Anyway, we're going to talk about a lot of stuff.
For $10 and hours off of your life, or $10, hours off of your life, but it's totally worth it. I don't have it. I haven't played, but you need to start playing.
Yes.
But anyway, so yeah, Hester Kerkstad, he hits a ball out of the park right center. Easy bomb. Crowd's going nuts. And before the ball landed, the fireworks shoot off. And I'm not kidding. The ball was 2 feet from hitting the fireworks, and it was almost one of the greatest moments in college baseball. It was really cool. Like the ball, almost exploded off the bat. It almost exploded again for a second time with the Chinese-made fireworks going off in right center. But cool moment. I think college baseball needs more fireworks. It's really the only place I've seen them at, so I think there needs to be more. But anyways, we have a fun show planned for you. We're going to talk a little bit about scores from around the nation. Big Friday night action, a lot of great pitching performances, a couple upsets, but really not too many. We're going to talk a little bit about some internship positions we're looking to fill. So if you or if one of your friends loves college baseball as much as we do and think you can be an asset to our team, let us know. We will be glad to talk to you about it. We're already getting dozens of submissions right now, which was really pleasing to see. Like, I wasn't sure how the response would be, but it turned out to be pretty good. We're also going to kind of talk about our top 10 weekend series competition. We're going to review those games that we have planned for you. Sorry, I'm trying to hold in a sneeze right now.
No, what you're doing is you're trying to do the math on how many games you have to win to not get eliminated this week.
And it's not very many. It's not many at all. It's probably about three. I think my magic number is down to three. But I had a good day today. I went 4-1-1, which. The 1-1 comes from a split I had, so I don't really know how to qualify it. But we'll dive into those games a little bit later. And we're also going to talk about and probably start the show on our regional projections, Field of 64. We're going to dive into it, talk to you guys about where our thoughts come in, like how we got to the bracket, and some of the surprise teams that we put in versus the surprise teams we left out. So that's our show for today. We're going to talk all about that. James, do you want to get started with the regional projection, or how do you want to do it? I'll let you dictate the show today since I have sneezies.
All right. God, stop saying sneezies. But okay, we will dive into the Field of 64 projections because Ben, at least where I am, it's May 10th. Where you are, it's May 11th now.
That's right.
We are approaching selection day very, very quickly. And teams are running out of games to win. They're running out of chances to solidify their positions, to get into a national hosting scenario, outcomes, yada, yada, yada. So this is a very important time of year. And it was very difficult when we were breaking down who's in the field of 64 on Wednesday. And there is my takeaway, that's what we're going to hit first, is just some takeaways from the field of 64, is my takeaway was that there's too many teams that don't deserve to make it. I felt like I felt like we literally had, and I think part of it is just like based off how weird the RPI gets at any particular day. Like, I feel like you really have to wait for the season to finish before you really look at the RPI, because it can change so much. Your team,
and it does change a lot. Like every single day, it changes drastically, because even if you beat a bad team, your RPI goes down. Like,
well, you know, the problem with the RPI is that the strength of schedule only gets updated until you play the game.
Yeah.
So it's like I wish that the RPI could take your strength of schedule into account like 2 weeks in advance, but they couldn't do that because we don't know how good, like, we can't assign a weight to Louisville, like, when they still have 13 more days until you play them. You know, so it's a flawed system, you know, because if RPI was determined by strength of schedule ahead of time, then like the teams that are playing Florida right now, based off the beginning of the year, like their strength of schedule had been much higher.
Yeah.
So it's very weird. So it was, yeah.
For the point the, that, oh, go ahead. Sorry. Finish your
I was
point.
Gonna, I was, the point of that whole aside there was that it was very difficult to find, to fill our last 6, 7, 8 spots of the at-large bids. We found ourselves like reaching very low to fill, and we also found ourselves looking at teams that mathematically should have been 2 seeds, but we're like, no, like we're looking at who they have left to play. We're looking at who they're beating. Like, what? I don't know. It was weird. It was weird, to say the least.
It was the weirdest week we've had with the regional projections. But for the listeners that don't know what RPI is, I think I came up with the best explanation for it on accident. I was talking to one of my good buddies, Jacob Zolman, who kind of keys me in on all the Big 12 coverage going around the nation. And I was just talking to him, and I was like, dude, the RPI is like Spark Notes. Like, for the listeners that don't know what Spark Notes is, it's what got us through elementary school, middle school, and high school. You didn't have to read the textbooks. You could just glimpse through the Spark Notes, and it'll tell you exactly what you need to know. And I was like, so the RPI is like Spark Notes. Like, it tells you a good amount of what is going on in college baseball, like who's good and who's not. But like, Spark Notes doesn't tell the full story. The RPI doesn't tell the full story. And I think that's what makes us the best, is that we also have the eye test involved. We know the players. We know, like, we've seen a lot of games around the country. We know what these teams' tendencies are. So the RPI is good for us to like look back on. But at the end of the day, we trusted our instincts, and we reached for those final 4 or 5 teams to put in the tournament just based off of prior knowledge and like what we expect to happen. So that's kind of how we got started with the 64 team bracket. It was tough finding like 3 2-seeds and like 4 or 5 3-seeds for us because of the whole RPI scenario. Like, when a team's 19th in the RPI and we put them as a 3-seed, it kind of looks bad on our end, but at the same time, we know that their RPI is going to drop drastically because they're about to play Michigan State and Purdue, you know? So yeah. That's kind of our logic behind it. Obviously, there's going to be some people that say our logic is flawed, which is fine. At least it shows that they care. But but anyways, James, let's look at our 64 team projection and kind of talk about who our hosts are, why we thought they were the right team to host, talk about who our last 5 in were, our first 5 out, kind of like the whole yada yada story of what's going on with our thought process. And also, timeout. Also, shout out to Dimitri, because Dimitri helped us out a lot on this. So our third man, Dimitri, put in a lot of work behind the scenes with this.
Yeah, I'd call Dimitri our Friday night guy. Honestly, yeah. He's not even the third man. He's Friday night guy. Yeah. Much love to him. But I'm looking through our regional projections, and I think low-key, like, this Arkansas regional we put together is sneaky difficult. Like, it's not a walk in the park.
Yeah, it's not a walk in the park, but the way Arkansas has been playing, it might be. It might just end up being a walk in the park. So, James, read off the teams that we have in the Arkansas regional, and then I'm going to pick my favorite regional as well after that.
Okay. I really like the Arkansas regional. You've got an Arkansas team who looks – they look. You know what they look like? They look like a professional baseball team.
They're not too far off. I bet they could beat almost every rookie ball team, high A team out there in minor league baseball.
Maybe fans know this, maybe they don't, but I think I can say with extreme confidence that if you are a scholarship player in if there's 14 teams at SEC, if you're in like the top 8 teams, at least half of those guys are going to have a chance to play professional baseball.
At least.
And I'm being generous. I'm being harsh on the talent. if you're in a starting lineup for one of those teams, and if you pitch on the weekends, especially pitch on the weekends, you will play professional baseball. And we're just watching. I really like this regional to answer your question because Arkansas looks like a professional baseball team, and they're matched up with Stony Brook, the 4 seed and automatic qualifier.
We know the story behind Stony Brook too. Like, yeah. The 4 seed does not scare them.
No, definitely not.
Former College World Series team back when we were in high school. They ended up having, I think, 2 major leaguers on that team as well. So they play good ball up there at Stony Brook.
Oh, dude, speaking, you just reminded me, since you mentioned about major leaguers and Stony Brook, I don't know why this reminded me, but I have a trivia question for you later in the show.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm always down for some trivia.
But to finish the last two teams in the Arkansas regional, we have Arizona State as a 2 seed, and I feel like this series is a must-win for them. They're playing Nebraska this weekend on the road. They need to pick up these road wins, and it was nice to see them get a victory Friday night.
Yeah, they got more than a victory on Friday night. I think they ended up winning by like 12. Awesome. Spencer Torkelson hit his 18th of the year, which he had like 3 going into April.
Yeah, dude. When he rounds the bases on home runs, I feel sorry for the ground.
He reminds me of Mark McGwire. That's my player.
Dude, I love that. I can just picture Mark McGwire and Spencer Torkelson rounding the bases. and then Sam Houston State is the 3 seed. That is a very, very scrappy team out of the Southland Conference. They went out of their way this year to schedule a very, very tough non-conference. Because last year they won 40 games. They didn't win their conference tournament, which – I mean, it's very difficult to win a conference tournament. You've got to win 5 games in a row.
Absolutely.
5 out of 6. You know, very difficult. And they didn't get in last year because of a low strength, outside strength of schedule, and they didn't want that to happen this year. So right now their wins and losses are down. I think we have them top 10 in the mid-major, top 25. So that kind of helps put these teams in perspective in our regionals. So that's a fun matchup. That program, very high energy, very intense against Arizona State, probably the best pro ready bats in the country, and then Arkansas as well, one of the most impressive teams in the country. Obviously, I mean, between
nothing would get me happier than seeing like a second championship game. So like, one team has to beat the other team twice in this regional.
Yes.
A second championship game between Arkansas and Arizona State. I think the final score would be 25-30.
Dude, just hunker down in the outfield. Hunker down in the bullpen.
That would be a game where you would have to play 4 outfielders.
Oh, what? No infielders needed. Like, we don't even – dude, you could take the first baseman and the opposite side infielder, put them both in the outfield. Just let the pitcher cover first. There ain't going to be any balls –
No ground balls.
Yeah, 100%. So I really like that regional, and I think it's, you know, it's fairly likely to have happen as well. Arizona State's definitely stuck in a 2 seed unless some crazy stuff happens. I feel
maybe Arizona State is a bubble team in my opinion. Like, they have to play good baseball like the last 10 games of the year, or else I don't think they'll get in. Which is sad because they were the last undefeated team in the country at like 19-0.
But whoever ends up with them is not going to be happy to see them. Right. I can't see. This is what's so weird about doing these regionals. I agree with you. Like, they very well could be a bubble team. You might think they are now, and maybe I'm missing something. But imagine if you wake up on selection day and you see them in your regional as a 3.
Ugh.
Because don't get me wrong, like, how can you be a last, you know, four or five in and be a two seed? That's not a thing.
No.
Right? Like, it's not
that a thing. Not a thing.
Right? So that means you're a three seed. No. Like, yeah. I'm not, like, if I'm Miami, if I'm trying to think of a team like middle of the pack, you know, Oregon State, if I'm Texas Tech and I get them as a three seed, I'm raising hell. It's so weird, dude. It's going to be crazy because there's going to be some stolen bids. At least you can imagine, because those conference tournaments are just – there's too many conference tournaments for things not to go haywire.
Right. Right. And none of the conference tournaments play out the way you think they will.
There's, like, too many. There's 31 of them. It's not like there's only three.
Right. I would say less than half end up with the one seed winning it all.
Yeah. I'll correct myself. There's not 31 conference tournaments. A couple – the Pac-12 doesn't have a conference tournament from what we were told.
Is that right?
Yeah, so I swear we had a fan give us a DM on Twitter saying, hey, for the record, the Pac-12 doesn't have a conference tournament.
That's so stupid. I didn't even know that.
So totally wild. Like, there's no excuse for that. I remember growing up watching college football, there were some conferences that didn't have a conference championship game. I was like, what is this? But while I'm looking up this direct message, I'd like for you to give me a breakdown of one of your favorite regionals, maybe a team that you can't quite figure out.
Yeah, so there's two regionals that I really like that we have projected. One of them is the Miami regional, and so Miami's regional is Miami playing Florida Gulf Coast. Gulf Coast has a good team this year. They're leading the ASUN. Very dangerous when it gets to June. And then the 2 and 3 matchup is LSU and FAU. And FAU is leading the Conference USA right now by a pretty good margin. And they look as dangerous as anybody. So having them as a 3 seed in your regional, not going to be good. Miami is also an inexperienced team. Their team is full of younger guys who don't have the postseason experience that most Miami teams in the past have had. So that's one that I like to see. I would see maybe a 2 or 3 seed coming out of there, possibly a 4. And the other one I really like is Texas Tech's regional, where we have Texas Tech playing Austin Peay out of the OVC. Austin Peay is usually a really good team. I used to play in the Ohio Valley Conference my freshman year, and they always have a really good Friday night guy. And they have the bats to compete with Texas Tech's pitching. So that's a sneaky 1 versus 4 matchup that I could see going the wrong way. And then Missouri playing Texas State. And so Missouri, we can't quite figure out this year. Missouri's been really good and really bad at times. And then Texas State looks like probably the best team in Texas. If they played a full Texas tournament, I think Texas State at least finds himself in a championship game.
I mean, it's Texas Tech, obviously. Next, like, their Baylor is right up there as well, but the matchup between Baylor and Texas State, I'm all for it.
I'm pretty sure Texas State beat Baylor this year.
I think they did. I think
maybe not.
In that Shriners Classic down
here. Yeah, I don't remember if they played, but those are my two that I really like that we have projected. The rest, I don't know. It's kind of hard to tell. But
I'm going big wild card.
Okay.
Big wild card. Wake Forest Demon Deacons. I don't know if they're going to get in. We went back and forth on them a lot. We have them as a 3 seed right now in the Stanford Regional with Baylor as a 2, Harvard going out west as the 4. That is a fun regional. They're a wild card, and the reason I say they're a wild card is because they're all in on player development, and everyone says they are, but some people do it better than others, and
they
do it better than others. And I saw a tweet from their program early in the season. Baseball America went back and they redo the recruiting class rankings, you know, after freshmen turn into juniors and yada, yada, yada. And the Wake Forest Twitter page said, wow, shocking. They said, wow, another year of an unranked recruiting class turning into top 25. That's player development. And they did like the
wow
emoji. Yeah, it was in, you know, early February. And I'm telling you, man, like these dividends, they really start to pay off after 4 or 5 months, like the development and the compounded interest there of players getting better. And when you take that against maybe like an old school program who, you know, still thinks the answer to getting better is hitting better BP and making your adjustments in BP, then like that's a wild card. Like that's a team that can all of a sudden end up like one win away in a super regional. So that's my take right there.
Right. I like that. So I'm going to break down our last five in. So the last teams that we put into the tournament and then our first five out. So James already mentioned Wake Forest. They were one of the last five teams we put in. And it was just based off of player development and what we forecasted them to do the rest of the season. The other four are Clemson, Louisiana Tech, Iowa, and Oklahoma. And out of those five teams, I think only one of them won today. Iowa ended up winning, but Clemson lost today. Louisiana Tech lost today.
Dude, wasn't it like pulling teeth putting any of those teams in?
Yeah, it was. It was like we didn't think they quite deserved it, but like who else are you going to put right now?
And when we say who else are you going to put, like we tried. Like I think we scrolled way too far on our list of teams. Like, okay, we're getting into like La La Land territory here with our options. It's got to be these teams.
And so the first five out, so the teams that just missed the cut, Florida State, Nebraska, Florida, Liberty, and UC Irvine. So out of those five teams, James, which one of those do you think finds herself in the tournament the easiest? Like, because obviously these are just projections. We don't know exactly what's going to happen. But out of the first five out, who do you think gets into the tournament with the most confidence?
Dude, my brain got fried after you said UC Irvine because I remembered how much we went back and forth on them. So give me that list again.
No, you're fine. I think UC Irvine actually beat Cal Poly today, which big win for them because Cal Poly's leading the Big West.
Yep.
So it's Florida State, Nebraska, Florida, Liberty, and UC Irvine.
The team that is most likely to find themselves in?
Yeah.
I've got to say Florida State. Like Florida had a big win today.
Yeah.
Coming down 8 runs to Tennessee. Whew. I mean, they boost their SEC record to 10-15, and they're going to need it to climb a little bit, and they're going to have to show up in that conference tournament. But when you – this is the thing about the RPI and all that, is they're going to have 7, 8, 10 more games against top 25 teams, and if you just, like, go 500 in those, like, RPI goes boom. Yeah. You got these teams in the – in the 30s that are going to start playing some teams with like RPIs of 180s. And like, that just crushes you, just absolutely crushes you. So I think a team like Florida State, and then if not Florida State, Florida.
And the difference between, I think, Florida State and Florida is Florida State has always played well in their conference tournament. Florida, not so much. They're kind of like hit or miss. So,
and this is the last thing I want to take on, which is so weird. If those two teams get in, how can you possibly give them a 3 seed?
That's the worst, like the worst draw of all time. You like imagine being a 2 seed, like somebody like
you got to put them in like a 16. Like who's our worst projected host right now? It would have to be in Illinois. They'd be a 3 seed at the Illinois regional.
Yeah, and so like, could you imagine being a team like Indiana, who we have as a 2 seed, like facing off against a team much more talented than them as a 3 seed? Like, that's just sickening. Like, that makes me so sad. Like, how about Indiana State we have as a 2 seed? Like, hey, Indiana State, go. You're going to play against Florida State round one. Like, good luck. Good job getting a 2 seed. Like, they would have been better off as a 3 seed.
100%. I guess, lastly, just some things I see changing on this. I fought against UConn being as high as a 2 seed. I think they're going to come down. Right now we have them as a 2. Now, granted, one of the worst 2s, but that's just where they stand right now. Yeah. And there wasn't really many other teams that were deserving of it. I see.
So here's a question for you.
Yes.
What 2 seed do you think has the best chance of becoming a host?
Oh, Oklahoma State.
I think so too. Especially with the win today at Oklahoma.
If they continue to win series and, you know, maybe go 4-2 in the Big 12 tournament, Oklahoma State. They could sneak in as a lower host.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think between Oklahoma State,
they have a brand new stadium coming up for 2020.
I think there's 3 Big 12 teams that all have a good chance to host, and it's going to be which one of these 3 teams wants it the most. It's between Baylor, West Virginia, and Oklahoma State. Those 3 teams right there have a chance. If they run the table in the Big 12, they have a chance to host. Which I think the NCAA will reward them with a host because they need more Big 12 teams. Right now, I think we only have Texas Tech. So those three teams, Oklahoma State, Baylor, and West Virginia, all are going to battle it out. It's going to make it for a really exciting Big 12 tournament. I guess this is a good time to mention that Texas is on the like on the cusp of not even making They're not going to make it. Like there's probably higher odds before the season of does Texas win the national championship or do they not make their conference tournament?
Oh, 100%.
It's probably like 500 to 1 that they don't make their conference tournament, and cuz only one team in the Big 12 doesn't make it. And it's probably like a 50 to 1 that they win the College World Series. And it's just amazing that we're about to witness history. People are already calling for what's his name? Not Steve Pierce.
David
Pierce. Who's Steve Pierce? Oh, Steve Pierce plays for the freaking Red Sox.
He's your favorite. He's your favorite player on your favorite team.
That's just false. but yes, people are already calling for David Pierce's job. Like, how is he going to come in here and be the worst team in the Big 12? Get swept by Kansas. So that's our Texas talk for the day. So James, I guess we had enough of the regional projection breakdowns and the analysis that we just did. Let's move on to some scores from around the country. The one score I want to talk about first is how our boy, Alec Manoah, one of our guest interviewers, goes 8 innings today against Kansas State.
13 strong.
8 strong on the road, 13 punchouts. Leads West Virginia to a must win if they want to have a chance to win the Big 12. It was exciting to see that. I didn't get to watch the game, but I checked it on the stats like after the fifth. I was like, uh-oh, he's dealing. Like, how long is he going to go?
Don't get in his way.
Yeah, and I bet he's going to be the funniest guy in the world in the dugout the next 2 days, Saturday, Sunday. Like, he already did his part. He's just chilling. Like, the whole West Virginia team is going to have to go play 2 more games in Kansas State while he just sits back, relaxes, and knows that he's the big dog on campus.
So. Oh yeah, he's an animal. He's more talented than it. I don't know if he's more talented than he is fun, or more fun than he's talented, because it's both saying a lot either way.
Yeah, and
it's definitely a scary team with him leading them Friday night. And I guarantee you, when he's on the mound, everyone in the lineup feels a little more comfortable. Like, they feel like maybe they don't have to do as much. And say what you want about all that stuff, but it is a thing. So.
Right.
That's my take on it.
Right. And so finishing up with some Big 12 action, TCU wins a must-win game for them as well, like trying to battle away from that 8 seed. They beat Kansas on a walk-off bomb to right field. So that's a good win for TCU. They're kind of rolling. They've won 3 of the last 4 in the Big 12. Oklahoma State remains hot. Last week, if you remember, they sweep Oregon State at Oregon State. And this week they go into Norman, Oklahoma, win 5-1 on Friday night. It was never close. Big win for the Cowboys. Moving on to the ACC, we had a football score, a triple option football score between Georgia Tech and Duke.
You love the triple option.
I love the triple option. Give me more of that. Georgia Tech's actually going away from the triple option this year, which makes me a little bit sad. But they win 14-10. The ball was absolutely flying in Raleigh. Is that where Duke is? Raleigh, North Carolina?
Durham. I think it's
Durham. Wherever they are. Ball was flying. 14-10. Tristan English hits a home run. They actually had another guy hit 2 home runs, but I just blanked on his name. That happened a lot.
speaking of Georgia Tech, once you're done with recapping the game, we got to talk about Georgia Tech's offense.
Let's talk about it right now. What do you got for us, James?
Okay. So we had talked earlier in the year how it was the Kyle McCann show. If you're a Georgia Tech fan, it is no longer the Kyle McCann show. I am counting, let me do my great and honorable math here. I'm counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guys with a weighted on base average north of 375 that are regulars in the Georgia Tech lineup. That, I mean, that's ridiculous. A good weighted on base is like, you know, 350.
And then
you've got Kyle McCann. I'll use some stats people might be more familiar with. Kyle McCann's got an OPS over 1,100. Tristan English, OPS north of 1,100. Luke Waddle, an 840 OPS. Michael Goldberg, an 880 OPS. Baron Radcliffe, 966 OPS.
That's who it was. Baron Radcliffe had two bombs today.
That'll change the OPS.
Six RBIs for him.
Not bad. So they can really swing the bat. They can really hit, as evidenced by their 14 runs today. So now you've heard a little bit more about those guys. And, you know, I'm going to keep digging into them a little bit. Kyle McCann, he punches out a little bit more than you'd like to see. But, you know, maybe that's just part of his approach, just swing hard for the fences. I don't know. Only he does. He's punching out about 25% of the time, a little high. But you've got Goldberg. Where's my boy Goldberg at? He's only punching out 10% of the time. So, and this is going to segue into our next topic about what wins games in the playoffs. And maybe we should talk about it with the regional, but Goldberg punching out 10% of the time, Tristan English 12% of the time. These are guys with elite bat to ball skills. So now you know a little bit more about the Georgia Tech offense.
Right. No, I love it. And that's a team that I hope hosts a regional. It looks like they are. I also want to see Georgia host a regional. Georgia takes down Auburn 11-2 at Auburn. Just an absolute, like, worst performance I've ever seen Auburn have. Just everything was going wrong for them. There was walks, there was errors, there was all this stuff.
They got one of their ace arms back in the rotation this weekend,
too. Yeah, Tanner Burns is back. So I don't think he pitched today. I don't remember him pitching. Yeah. But what I will say is I hope there comes the day where Georgia Tech and Georgia both host regionals so I can literally drive back and forth between them because I'm about an hour and a half.
Animal.
I'm about an hour and a half from both of them in our little triangle. So like I will spend as much time as possible at the baseball fields because – I will drive back and forth between Georgia Tech and Georgia. I'm not scared. James, ask me if I'm scared to do that.
Guys, Ben's not scared.
Ask me.
Ben, are you scared?
No, I'm not scared. Why would you ask that? That's stupid. No, I'm not scared. I will drive back and forth between Athens, Georgia and Atlanta, Georgia. No problem. So
I hope it happens.
I hope it happens, too. Speaking of regional hosts, I will tell you a team that looks like they are almost locked in to host a regional, and that is the Pirates of East Carolina.
Oh, they're going to be a national seed. That's what I was going to say. That was my last topic.
Yeah, they clinched the American Athletic Conference today with a 6-1 win at Wichita State. The Pirates don't care who they're playing. They literally don't. Like, I know they got swept by UCLA earlier this year, but they
trapped. I want them to play again.
I do too, and I think they will. Like, hopefully it matches up like a super regional where they go back out there, which is tough because everybody knows it's tough to beat a team three times in a year. Imagine trying to beat a team five times in a year. Like, they would have to win 2 out of 3 in that super regional. So that's something I'm looking forward to. There was something else I was going to say. But Louisville splits with Virginia today.
That's tough, man. UVA is a very professional program. It's tough to beat them twice in a day, especially on the road.
Right.
Especially on the road. I have a question for you, a little trivia question.
Okay.
And we also have a fan question that I want to put you on the spot with. Which one do you want to roll with first?
Which one am I not going to get embarrassed by?
You're not. Oh, one of them's your opinion. The other one actually has a correct answer.
All right, let's go correct answer first.
Oh, correct answer. All right.
Yeah.
So we're going to get the fans a little warmed up as we're coming towards the end of the season, getting ready for the conference tournament and the wonderful field of 64. So just to get into that frame of mind, Ben, I want you to name – I'm going to give you a trivia question.
Okay.
Name me the 10 – winningest college baseball programs in the history of the known universe.
All right,
In terms of winning percentage.
All right, so wait, how many of these are Power 5 teams?
Let me do the math. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Okay, so I'm going to start with the non-Power 5 teams because I think those might be a little bit easier. I'm going to go with Cal State Fullerton.
They are number 10 exactly. Correct.
Okay.
Ben is not cheating. We didn't even discuss this.
No, yeah. I'm going to go with Wichita State.
They're number 6.
Okay. I'm going to go with... So there's two more non-Power 5?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
You're not going to get one of them.
I'm going to go with Pepperdine.
No, sir.
Okay. I'm just going to go Power Five now. I'm going to say Arizona State.
Yes, they are number four all time.
USC.
Not in the top 10.
Wait. All right. So I said USC because there's two USCs. There's South Carolina.
They're both not in the top 10.
Dang it. I was hoping one of those two would be in it.
You were the kid who wrote like true, false with like a T.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Dang hey, you it, look dude, like I thought for sure one of those USCs was going to be on there.
Hey, and you also look like some of our fans in our 10 weekend pick'em challenge that like kind of circled two different teams. Both.
Oh yeah.
Like, no, Johnny, that doesn't work.
I'm going to go with UT.
Dude, name me a school. Don't play.
All right, Texas.
Yeah, they're actually number one all time.
Really?
727 winning percentage.
All right. Is Rice on there?
Rice is on here somewhere.
Are they a top 10?
No.
I'm going to say Florida has got to be on there. LSU. Vanderbilt. No, nope. Vanderbilt's definitely not.
Nope.
Florida and LSU aren't on there?
Correct.
Mississippi State's got to be on there.
No.
Shoot. North Carolina?
Nope.
Who's
been to the tournament 40 years in a row?
Florida State. That's dumb.
Florida State is number two, right behind Texas.
Okay, so give me like two more guesses, and I'll let you fill out the rest. I'm going to say that... Well, this is tough. All right, I give up. I literally can't think of anybody else that would potentially be on that list.
Number three is Miami, the U.
Oh, I'm stupid.
No, you're not. You did really well. Number five is Oklahoma State.
Really? Oh, they did have some awesome years in like the 80s, 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Robin Ventura, Pete Inclaviljic, or whatever his name is. Those guys.
It's really incredible how much higher Texas and Florida State's winning percentage is than everybody else, though.
Do you want to know an interesting Oklahoma State MLB alum that was, yes, like one of my favorite MLB players?
Yes.
Luke Scott.
Luke? Oh, I loved Luke Scott. Me too. I loved him. He had a sweet swing.
Yes, absolutely.
He's Oklahoma State Cowboy, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. And then these are two that you're not going to get. Actually, three.
Give me a hint at like one of them.
No, I'm just kidding. I don't know the mascot of three of these teams.
All three of them? You don't know that? Are they Division One?
Okay, wait. I actually know the mascot of one of them. Are they
Division One?
Yes, these are all Division One. One of these teams has been a Division One program for 157 seasons.
Jesus. Is that like, how long has the United States been a country? Like less than 300. I don't know. Go ahead and tell me. I have no idea.
In order, Oral Roberts at seven. I think, what are they, the Roadrunners?
No. Oral Roberts is like the...
Some type of bird.
Some type of bird. I'll look it up. Go ahead.
It's got a funky looking beak. Eight is Fordham.
Fordham?
157 seasons. And
I guess they must have dominated the early part of the year. Jesus.
Yeah. Back in 1879, their Friday night arm was just ridiculous.
Yeah, pretty much. They probably played like one game a week.
Dude, what do you think the whole landscape of college baseball was like in 1896?
They're the Golden Eagles, Oral Roberts is. Sorry.
Nice. And then St. John's is number nine.
That's so stupid. I want a modern college baseball winning percentage.
All right, here. Well, here, you're, I'm going
to
read
when
you.
When I think of college baseball, I think directly to Fordham, right? Like that's,
yeah.
That's just, America's team. That's America's team right there, Fordham.
Back in my day, Fordham. I'm going to read you teams 11 through 15 because you're going to like this.
Okay.
11, Coastal Carolina.
Ooh, love it.
Arizona 12, East Carolina 13, Clemson 14, Texas A&M 15.
Wow, that's a cool. Where are you looking that list up at?
The good old interweb. It's from Wikipedia. But now I've got this leads me to another question. We had some fans submitting some awesome questions, and we're gonna just pick one up right now. Ben, what are some of the most overrated statistics in college baseball that you're gonna hear talked about?
Okay, so I hate the win-loss record because I think in college baseball that is so dumb. It doesn't measure how good a pitcher is.
It does not.
I guess it does to a certain small extent.
But like 20%.
If you factor in like the offense that you have behind you, like the defense you have behind you, like could you imagine like throwing a great game and then one error like ruins it and you get a loss?
And then the guys got to come in out of the bullpen behind you if you pick
yeah,
seven.
So, and then that's my other point is like the bullpen behind you, it plays a bigger factor because you could be set up to win a lot of games and then just have that college bullpen get blown up at the end of the game. So I have a good story about win-loss record. We had UT Martin had the first pitcher drafted in like probably 10 years when I was there. His name was Bug Cox, like B-U-G, like
that's not like, a joke. That is the most mid-major name I've ever heard.
Bug Cox, left-handed pitcher, 92-94, was probably the best overall pitcher in the OVC. Maybe not. There was a couple other good arms that ended up making major league rosters. But he was a career 0-27 in 3 years. And his ERA was like probably like 5, maybe 4 or 5, somewhere in there. But if you looked at his stats on paper, you're like, this guy is 0-11 this year. He sucks. But he was like 92, 93, good slider, would go like 7 innings, 3 runs every game. We just couldn't score for him. And anytime he came out with a lead, we would blow it. So Bug Cox is a good example why win-loss records mean nothing. Would you agree with that or disagree?
I totally agree. It's completely useless, ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, And you hit the nail on the head. I mean, you can pitch 8 innings, give up 1 run and lose, and you get a loss, and like it's really all about good fortune,
right? Like, I've seen Sunday pitchers go like 5 innings, 7 runs, but a Sunday in the SoCon, like the other team like will score 10, so yeah. Like you win 10-7 and you get a win, but you pitch bad, so.
I mean, there's this new statistic called game score that is available for, like, it ranks a pitcher's start from, like, I think it's from 0 to 100. I've even seen it on the college game, so that's a pretty good one. You can check. It's on the box scores now from what I've seen.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
No, so what would be the statistic that is the most overrated in your opinion?
Oh, boy, there's so many. I mean, I really like the I really like the win-loss record. Batting average with runners in scoring position is super overrated. It's super overrated.
Yeah, it's overrated because if you're a good hitter, they're not going to pitch to you.
Well, it's overrated because like people who are good are going to – like people aren't all of a sudden better hitters with runners in scoring position. And I don't care like if John – and the funny thing is like they're using batting average, which is – is the worst statistic to measure a player's actual skill level.
Right.
And so it's so funny. Like, oh, in 38 at-bats, he's hitting, you know, 365. Like, yes, he has gotten hits 36% of the time. That doesn't measure how well he's actually doing. He's gotten good results. It doesn't tell you if he's hitting the ball hard. It doesn't tell you any of that stuff. It just measures, did the ball land without it being caught? You know?
Right.
So, It's totally that one's super overrated. Like the only thing that you can take out of that is, or I wouldn't even say take out of it. It's like if you have a good hitter, he should hit good with runners in scoring position. He should hit good when runners are not in scoring position. If you have a bad hitter, he will hit bad all the time. It's just ridiculous. But you know, I can promise you this. I can literally promise you this. No Major League Baseball manager is told by their front office to organize their lineup by guys who have good batting averages, runners in scoring position. I can guarantee it.
I'm 100% behind that.
Yeah.
Because, and I already touched on it a little bit. If you're a good hitter and you have runners in scoring position, you're not going to get pitched to the same as you would with the bases empty. And so, like your four hole hitter might be hitting 200 with runners in scoring position because he gets sliders in the dirt. He walks a lot. He doesn't give, and sometimes like he hits sack flies or like he does a job, moves a runner over, like runner on second, nobody out. And your cleanup hitter hits a ball to second base. Like, all right, like you move the runner over, it hurts your batting average, but like, it's better than someone standing up there and striking out or like popping up a bunt to the catcher.
Right.
So there's a lot of just different variables that go into play with batting average in general, especially with runners in scoring position.
Speaking of bunts, aren't you so excited to just see all of the teams run themselves out of innings in regionals to bunt and move people over and just get people?
There's three guarantees in college or in life in general. Death, taxes, and four seeds bunting in the first inning to move a runner into scoring position. like opening day of a regional, a four seed gets a runner on first base.
Lead off walk.
They will square to bunt and bunt him over to second base 11 times out of 10, James. Literally guaranteed. Like four seeds will be bunting, giving the one seeds as many outs as possible, which is so stupid because you're not going to beat a one seed in a one-run game most times than not. Like, the way that you beat a one seed is putting a six spot up in the first inning. Yeah. Like, putting the pressure on them or, like, keeping it really close until, like, the seventh and getting really lucky, like, with a double in the gap. Like, that's the way you beat one seeds, not by bunting in the first inning, trying to move one run across. Because what's going to happen is the one seed's going to go hit in the bottom half of the inning and put up a four spot. And you're like, well, dang, I gave him an out. Like,
my favorite way to think about that is like, let's say this exact scenario you laid out happens. Like, oh, you give up a bunt in the first inning to get a guy over. Then maybe you do it one more time later in the game. And let's say like you lose by two runs, and you're like, oh man, we lost. And then the umpire's like, wait a second, would you like two more outs to keep playing? And the coach is like, Yes, please. Give us two more. Well, you could have those outs, but you wanted to play with 25 outs instead of 27.
You wanted to give them more outs, or you wanted to start the game playing with 25 outs instead of 27. Like, that's a perfect example, James. I'm glad you brought that up.
And coaches would be like, please, just two more outs. That's all we need is two more outs.
Like, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, why would you give away outs early in the game whenever, like, that's whenever you have to jump on teams to beat them? Like, do you think Florida State is a one seed. Do you think Mississippi State is scared to be down 1-0 going into bat at home against Army or like Stony Brook? Like, no. They're going to be like, all right, one. Like, we'll get that back in one swing of the bat. Just wait.
Yeah.
But like, they go in and like, they give up a four spot in the first and they're like, uh-oh. Like, we got to get the bats rolling. A lot of added pressure. That's how you win games in the postseason. Another way to win games in the postseason, James, you got to have a dude out of the bullpen that throws cheese.
Oh, like, man, this kind of – I didn't mean to segue into this, but no, yes, I wanted to talk about this so bad. Continue. Like
that is my personal opinion because watching, you know, 13 years that I can remember watching playoff college baseball, the teams that don't have the arms throwing mid-90s, like, they don't last. Like, you have to have – a guy in the back end of your bullpen to go more than one inning throwing hard, because these one seeds and two seeds have seen almost big league sliders and big league fastballs all year. And whenever you're a lower seed, a three or four seed, shows that you're not as talented, I guess, as the other two teams. Mm-hmm. And whenever you throw a guy that's throwing 88 to 91 with a little league slider, like, these guys punish those pitches. Like, those are exactly the hitting speed they're looking for. So you would be better off throwing like a side armor at 65 than your big closer out of the bullpen at 88 to 91. But the four seeds and the three seeds that have advanced to Omaha, they have those closers to go, you know, eight outs at the end of the game, throwing 92, 94. We've even seen teams like Davidson have a guy like 97, 98. Coastal Carolina, the year they won it all, they had like three bullpen guys that had ERAs under one, like in the 0.89 range. Like, these guys were dudes, and like, they would have been.
I added it to some of their strikeout totals, by the way.
You did. You contributed to that.
And so, they got a walk, okay?
So bullpens are a must to win games in the postseason because your starter most likely is going 5 to 7 innings, And, like, you have to rely on one or two more guys to finish the game. And the moment that pitching change is happening, the people in the other dugout are literally chomping at a bit, just waiting to see a different guy, because that's when runs get pushed across.
Yeah, and just to continue to harp on Ben's point as he blows his nose.
I'm trying to avoid the sneezes, James.
Dude, it's velocity and strikeouts. Mostly strikeouts win games in the playoffs, in the postseason. And the reason strikeouts matter so much is because you don't need anyone to play defense on strikeouts. Like, it doesn't matter if you've got one guy on the field or 99 guys on the field. Like, swing and a miss is a swing and a miss, and you don't have to – if you strike someone out, you don't have to worry about bad hops. You don't have to worry about, you know, an umpire makes a bad call, which almost nearly happens. So a better example would be, like, your infielder making an error. Like, he fields at a 960 clip, but this was one of those times where a ball, like, you know, bounced off the heel of his glove. Like, strikeouts are so, so big. The teams that are able to – and another thing is – here, what you will see over and over and over again, you're going to feel more educated and, like, you can understand the game better. You will watch teams in these regionals and super regionals when the games are on the line and there are runners in scoring position in a one-run game or a tie game. And if there's a guy on the mound that isn't able to get a punch out and there's a good hitter at the plate or even a decent hitter at the plate, you can pretty much guarantee the other team's screwed. Because there's this thing called a batting average on balls in play, and it's like 350. So if you actually hit the ball, you have almost a 400 chance of getting a hit. And if you're on defense, the only way to not have to deal with that garbage is if you punch the dude out. So you need to have pitchers that can punch guys out, and you want to hope that you're facing bats who do punch out.
Right.
So, strikeouts are – it's what gets you out of innings. How many times have you just seen, like, a big out recorded from a big school against a smaller school in a regional, and it ends on a punch out because he just overpowers him? It's really nuts. So that's something to watch out for. That's really what helps you win games.
No, I agree. Another thing that helps you win games are – and this is just a small segment. We don't have to dive too deep into it. But runners – not runners. Sorry, take that back. Hitters that – I think are dangerous on the base paths. That helps. Like, anytime you can advance two bases on a base hit or steal a base, maybe I'm just saying that based off of teams in the past that have done well that weren't supposed to do well. We've seen teams advance to super regionals that probably shouldn't have, just based off of guys that can steal bases, run the bases smart, score from second on a single, go first to third on base hits. But you don't really see, like, teams with big power hitters that hit doubles and homers advance.
I can provide a perfect example that backs up your point.
Okay.
So 2016 Super Regional on Coastal Carolina's run to the World Series, they're playing against LSU. Anthony Marks steals second base to put the tying run there. And then to kind of go on what I'm talking about on the punch-out scenario, the winning run's on second, and LSU gives up a dinky ground ball, which is not a strikeout. This is where you run into the ball-and-play problem. Michael Paez, the shortstop, hits a dinky ground ball over the third baseman's head, and to Ben's credit, the base running gets them in position at second. It's a slowly hit ball. Anthony Marks comes around second and scores the game-winning run. LSU's knocked out of a regional. And if it wasn't for Coastal Carolina's base running ability, put them on second. And then if LSU could have been able to get a punch out instead of having to rely on luck, then maybe they win that game. So we're not making this stuff up, guys. Like, you're going to see this. Like, oh, there's the base running, and oh, wow, you need to be able to punch guys out. And I think
a big reason why is because as much as we wish it would, like, home runs don't happen nearly as much in the postseason. Like, you're facing better pitching. Like, the fields are usually bigger with, like, different quirks and stuff. And once you get to Omaha, like, good luck trying to hit a homer. Like, it's just not happening. So base running is important. Punch outs are important. That's why you see teams like Texas make runs to the College World Series recently. Cal State Fullerton, Coastal Carolina, teams that strike people out, teams that run the bases well, hit behind runners. They can. And another thing with base running is, like, you can hit and run a lot. if you put them all in play, and I think the hit and run is the most dangerous play in college baseball, because you just see eight guys out in the field just look around like, what are we doing? Like, yeah. How do you cover? Do I cover? Like, what's going on? So that's just a little bit of insight that we think that provides teams with ways to win in the postseason. Personally, I think that we covered it pretty well. Anything that we're forgetting with that?
I mean, dude, it's you got to get ahead early. Like Ben was exactly right. Like don't give outs away early in the game. It's going to come back to haunt you, because the game's going to be over and you're going to wish to God you had one more out left and you gave it away.
Right. You gave it away. And dude, I think that's a perfect way to end the show. Just that quote right there. Like, don't give outs away, because you never because you're going to want those outs back at the end of the game. Like, If an umpire said, I will give you these two outs that you gave up in the first and third innings back, every coach in America, even if they were winning, like, yeah, we want those two outs back because, we want to extend this lead. So that's a good point. I like that a lot. It's a good quote to live by just in general. Like, don't give something away knowing that you're going to want it back, like, 3 hours later. Whatever it is in life, business, family, all that, don't give it away because you're going to want it back. So that's a good way to end the show. James, anything else you want to say before we get off?
I'm excited for Sunday night.
We will see you Sunday night. That is a fact. James's brother's graduating tomorrow, so everybody give John Barry a little round of applause. Good friend of the program.
That's right. I'll be seeing you, Ben.
See you, man.